skeletal forms burn toxic green. Vacant eyes lit with everlasting hellfire. And welcome to another episode of Let's Watch Scary Movies. As always, we are your horror hosts. I am Jenny.
I'm Caitlin.
Yes!
We did it.
I don't know why, we've just had a fit of the giggles. And yeah. This is our third attempt at starting the show. Because every time I tried, Caitlin was just shaking with laughter.
I don't know why, it's anyone's guess. Because Jenny is a consummate professional,
as always.
So now that we've managed the opening,
is this why we do so many distance recordings? Because when we're together, we're just
gets silly. But it's fine. I'm actually super excited to talk about today's movie.
Yes,
it is a fun one.
It is.
I actually thought last episodes would be fun. More fun than what it was, which was, as you know, if you're listening in order, Book of Shadows,
Blair Witch Part 2,
because we are in the very middle, the very midst of a series of sequels, Part 2.
Yes, this is Part 3 of Part 2.
The experiment where we find out, Part 3 of Part 2, the experiment where we find out, are sequels better?
I never said better.
Well, let's up the stakes a little bit. Jenny says that they can sometimes be better, and she's at least open to the idea.
I am definitely open to the idea. I can't, apart from Friday the 13th for me, where I prefer a sequel, I'm trying to think of another film where I actually prefer the sequel.
But may it be said, you rated Friday the 13th Part 2 lower than you rated the original.
Oh, I thought I rated it the same.
Maybe it was the same.
Like I said on the episode, like I preferred the kills in Friday the 13th, like the technical skill, whereas I preferred the plot and the writing.
It was an improvement.
Part 2.
Yeah.
So I would prefer to watch Part 2 if I had to pick one, just because I think it's a better film. But there are things that I love about the first one that kind of make them meet score-wise.
Yeah, I hear you. For me, it's like, now I'm 2-0, as in like, or 0-2. Where basically, so far, 2 out of the 4 films, I prefer the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I've yet to prefer the sequel. But the experiment continues.
Yes, absolutely.
Today's episode about Scream 2. Now, for those of you hardcore listeners that remember, Scream 1 actually took us 2 episodes to get through.
It did. I love to say.
Because we had such boners for it. So here we're coming into Part 2. And there's a lot of love here, frankly.
Yeah. They're like a dream team. Wes Craven, Kevin Williamson,
writer of both, yeah.
Like,
Wes Craven knows what he's doing, I mean. And I just think the Scream films are a good time, and they're also scary.
Yes.
And that is, like, the most potent combination.
I think it's the most successful franchise, as in, like, each film.
Being legitimately good?
Yeah.
Not just the money aspect?
Yeah, not so much the money, like, being a good franchise that stays consistent. We haven't had to go, you know, I was going to say, we haven't had to do Ghostface Goes to New York, but actually he does in the new one. It's set in New York. But, you know, like, he hasn't gone to space.
Or to hell.
Exactly. He hasn't had to fight Freddy Krueger.
I mean, who would it be? Who would the Ghostface nemesis be? Like a 90s slasher person.
Ooh, Dracula. Or the guy from
Thriller Killer from like Slumber Party Massacre. But those started earlier.
I know, but if you were going to have like a...
It's got to be a 90s off. Would it be the guy from I Know What You Did Last Summer?
Yeah, could be.
Because they made... How many of those are there? There's quite a 4 of them, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Or what else came out of the 90s? Final Destination, Urban Legend, which you mentioned earlier because there's an actress in this who's also an urban legend.
Yes.
Rebecca Gayhart, I believe. The Noxzema Girl for the Americans out there. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully they don't get to that point because they don't need to. Because I do think you're right. Individually, each film does sort of stand up on its own. Although, and I've said this before, there comes a point where I haven't seen them. I want to say it's after maybe Part 4 Or no, part three. I think I've never seen part four.
Okay, part four is, I was another one I missed it because it came out in 2011. And it was kind of after I stopped paying attention to like Scream films. Me and Andy watched it during lockdown. Brilliant film.
Really?
Yeah.
But wait, part three is the one where she's writing the book?
Yes.
So I have seen that.
Part three is really, really good.
And then five is the one that was last year, right?
And then six is the one that's out now.
Right. And I've seen five, but not six.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it's for sure one of the most successful horror franchises.
The only one in the franchise, and I've seen all six, the only one I don't like is part five.
Yes, which I did not love either.
No, I was angry at the writing and the dialogue.
You were missing Kevin.
I was very much missing Kevin. Whereas part six, I mean, I think we need to watch it so you...
Yeah, I am keen. I want to watch it. And again, going back to they're just entertaining. And...
Yeah, they're consistently scary.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of change enough about each one so that it's not watching the same film over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But then they kind of almost tongue-in-cheek keep it within a very small kind of class of people. So, you know, you've got like, it's always like a... So the first one is like the boyfriend and the crazy guy, and then you know, you go through them,
right,
and they kind of stick to similar themes in who the killers
it's
are.
It's true, it's like it's formulaic, but slashers in and of themselves are formulaic. It's their self-awareness that I think makes it so fun and makes it so...
You're in on the joke.
Different every time, even though the formula is essentially the same. Yeah, you're in on the joke. So true. Well, the descriptor haiku...
Oh, okay.
5, 7, 5, 5, 7, 9, 8, 6, 7, 5, 3, 0, 9. We're doing finger counting.
We are doing finger counting. Sydney. Oh, damn it. I fucked up home. Sydney is at college. That's too many, but never mind.
Oh, it's syllables, not words.
Yeah, that was the problem.
Okay. Here we go again. Sydney is at...
College. Ghostface is back.
Bitch.
Yeah.
There we go.
Basically, Sydney and Randy have left Woodsboro behind, and they have gone to college and made some new friends. The film, Stab, based on the book by Gale Weathers, is premiering. So there's lots of, like, Sydney's getting a lot of attention. And
that's the setup and the timeline, because it's basically and then, like 1 year later,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So then people start dying. That's not a spoiler, it's a Scream film. And,
what? People die.
People die.
How dare you?
I know.
In a slasher.
People die, and yeah, you've got kind of Gail and Dewey come back as well from the first film.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got kind of four people from the first film and their new friends trying to sort out who is Ghostface.
Who is Ghostface?
And not die.
And survive, yeah.
Yeah.
What score did you give it?
I gave it Knives, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I did Ghostface, I remember.
I did Ghostfaces again. I drew them here.
Mm-hmm.
I think we gave it the same.
I scored four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I wrote in my review, I said it's somewhat formulaic, but it's so aware of itself. It's a great meta film. It's fun. So to me, it didn't have the newness and originality that the first one brought, because...
Yeah.
Nothing ever will. That was literally the original. But for a follow-up, I just feel like they nailed it.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel tired. It didn't feel reused.
No.
So, yeah. And geez, the casting, my God. I mean, I guess some of them are unknowns at the time. I mean, Joshua Jackson plays like film student number two or something like that. But
you've got Sarah Michelle Gellar.
But even to have your supporting cast be these very, I mean, they're all decent actors.
Yeah.
For sure. So that just elevates it as well. But yeah, I would recommend it 100%. I mean, there's no doubt. If you are listening to the podcast, you are a horror film fan and you haven't yet seen it for whatever reason, despite the fact that it came out in 1997, when everyone was still using portable phones. Go see it right now. You can find it on... Where did we find it? Was it on Shudder?
No.
Was it on DVD?
Yeah, it was on DVD. DVD.
I love DVDs.
I love DVDs too.
It's a good thing I have such a big collection of them.
I know. So we watched it on DVD. I think it's available to pay for on Prime. It's not available for free.
Yeah, it was on some app.
Yeah.
Maybe Now TV or something like that.
Yeah. But yeah, go and watch it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, for sure recommend. And there's not too much that we can really get into without giving away spoilers, I feel. I mean, if you've seen the first one, you have an idea of where it's going roughly. It's just a new setting. And as Jenny said, new people.
Yeah.
Some new potential victims. And a little bit of that murder mystery feel that I think has always served it really well of who's the killer or killers, if we learned anything from the first one. So
exactly.
A good time is had by all. I recommend it. Even if you're doing a horror movie marathon night, Scream 1, Scream 2, you can't go wrong. So
I really, oh,
and yeah. If you're doing that, please invite me to your sleepover.
Yes, I'll bring popcorn.
So, I mean, I know it's not a very long intro, but I really do feel like we need to get into it because
There's no other way. Yeah, let's get into it.
Now it's time for a breakdown.
So this time we start at a cinema, a movie theater.
Which I just love.
Yep.
It's like, here's what happened at Scream, here we are at Stab.
Exactly.
Just, once again, the self-awareness is just a 10 out of 10. Yep. So, and then you've got, straight out the gate, Jada Pinkett Smith.
Playing Maureen. Although
she was, I think, Jada Pinkett then, not sure. Playing Maureen. And Omar Epps playing her boyfriend. Assuming boyfriend.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I can't remember his name.
Phil.
But they, I mean, you've got like A-list actors like straight up.
Yeah.
So, yes, they're going to see a movie. Everyone is just going bonkers.
It's like it was a free screening. I think he said that they got the tickets for free. And like the studio had sent the cinema loads of Ghostface costumes.
Oh,
so all
and
the
like
crowd.
Fake knives. Which yeah, everyone's that would wearing. Not go down now, but
no,
yeah.
Everyone's wearing Ghostface costumes, and yeah, you've got this couple, and they are not well. Maureen does not want to go and see this film.
No.
She wants to go and see the Sandra Bullock film.
I wonder which one they were referencing. Miss Congeniality,
maybe 97.
But yeah, she doesn't like scary movies, and so you've got another good usage of Red Right Hand.
Yep.
I think Wes Craven really loves this song. It was in the first one as well.
Okay, you can't go wrong.
It's true. Yeah, the audience is just, it is absolutely the rowdiest film audience I've ever seen. I mean, I have seen some rowdy film like audiences in my day.
I would freak out if I was at the cinema.
I mean,
that
was obviously exaggerated extremely. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think back. When I went to see Endgame, there was a lot of audience interaction during that Marvel movie. People were yelling at the screen and crying and cheering. That was very big. Also, the first time I went to see The Matrix, it was just so crowded. People were sitting in the aisles. I don't know what it that's another product of its times. Maybe we'll talk about Matrix one day, but like that 90s technology thing, you know, like the internet's still new. So yeah, I mean, some of those, but this goes above and beyond that madness.
It's
people
nuts.
Are just, it's like there's people bouncing around the background, throwing stuff.
Yeah,
at the
everyone's
screen,
throwing stuff, screaming,
tackling each other. Like, how's anybody even?
Yeah, and like, so we're getting to that. But I love already we've got some great dialogue because you've got Maureen talking about like horror films, and he's like, "What's the problem with him? Well, why did you pick a film for a genre that notoriously excludes black people?"
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And so then they get into this like really funny conversation because about like horror films and, you know, why she doesn't want to watch them. But everything that she's saying is just, you wouldn't expect to see it in a horror film.
Right.
It's why it works.
They're criticizing themselves.
Mm.
And also doing an opening scene featuring two black people, which I love.
Yes.
They, Heather Graham is Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
Gotta love that.
So once again, much like last week when we did Book of Shadows, and a lot of it is that we were watching a film within a film about a film that was, took place after a fictional film that pretended to be a real film. This also has a film within a film.
I love a film within a film within a film.
Yeah.
With another film. Itself.
We are now watching Stab.
In Scream.
In Scream 2.
One, which is taking place in Scream 2.
Yeah. Like, everyone's screaming. It's Heather Graham and she's going into the shower and turns on the shower and she like takes her top off. And everyone starts like cheering.
Yeah.
And Maureen again is like, why has she got to be naked? What does that, you know, have anything to do with the plot?
Brilliant. Such brilliant writing.
Yeah.
So she wants to go get popcorn. So she leaves to go get popcorn and has like a very weird conversation with her boyfriend where she insists that he pays for it. But they're on a date. Like, surely you should. It's like $4 for popcorn.
Well, I think she was like, oh, give me some money to get some popcorn. And he was like, haven't you got any? And she's like, yeah, but that's my money. I want to spend your money.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. I just love this character. So she goes to get popcorn, and even the way that it's like they know, Wes Craven and Kevin Williams know the audience is waiting for that death like we saw in the first one. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to pull one over us on us this time. We're waiting for it. And he's teasing us, and I love it. It is like edging. It's scare edging. So it's like you get some point of view shots following Jada Pinkett Smith in while she buys a popcorn, and people running past her dressed as Ghostface.
Scaring her, like the false jump scare.
Yeah, and she's very jumpy and like on edge. And then right before she goes to walk back into the movie theater, one does jump out and physically grabs her, and it turns out it's her boyfriend, Omar Epps.
Yeah.
Being hilarious.
Hilarious. And she says that she doesn't like to be scared, especially because when she was stood in the queue for the popcorn, you hear there's like two girls that have come out of the film, and one of them's like, oh, you know, you shouldn't be so scared, it's just a film. She's like, no, this really happened last year to some kids in California. So yeah, like she doesn't like it. She's like uncomfortable. And yeah, he jumps out at her.
Yeah, and scares her.
Which is just mean.
Yeah, it's mean. So she goes back into the movie theater on her own, and he says he's going to run to the bathroom.
But he doesn't. He goes to some sort of weird Egyptian temple.
He goes to worship at the altar of Ra. Yeah. So he walks into the bathroom, which is thankfully decorated in ancient hieroglyphics.
All over. Just in case.
What was the theme here? Are all the bathrooms like this?
Exactly. Like,
did they want to whisk you away to Egypt when you go for a wee? Or was it just that bathroom and the other bathrooms all have a different theme? Maybe one's like ancient Greeks, or yeah, you've got different options.
I need to know. We need to, he'll know.
Twitter. Let's ask Twitter.
Yeah.
We'll just put the word out. Someone will know the answer. But regardless, it's a good thing that it is decorated in ancient hieroglyphics because it has nothing to do with the plot at all. So anyway, he thinks he hears people having sex next to him.
Yeah, he has to go into a cubicle because all the urinals are full.
Yeah.
And he stood there and you hear like this weird noise. He's like,
it was such a weird noise. It did not sound like sex.
No. So like, I've never done this before anywhere. Been like, oh, and put my ear against a toilet wall. Gross.
Yeah.
Like, he puts his head like right up against it. And
get stabbed in the ear.
All the way through his head.
Mm-hmm. Gotta be... I don't know if it's a good death or a bad one. Maybe, I guess, because it's quick. Relatively painless.
But then you're the guy that got stabbed through the head in an Egyptian bathroom.
But no, you don't know that because you're dead.
I think I'd know.
Somehow, somewhere.
Yeah, I'd be pissed. In my Egyptian ascending to the Egyptian gods. Because I died in that temple.
You weren't mummified appropriately either. They're angry. They're angry gods. I really need to understand the ancient Egyptian bathroom. I think we're going to have to post a photo of it.
We are.
Get a screenshot. So Omar is stabbed through the bathroom stall / head. And then we switch back to Jada Pinkett Smith sitting alone. And she's yelling at the screen, which I love. She's like, somebody runs back in up the stairs. And she's like, no. Turn around. Yeah. Where are you going?
It's like early in the film when like they first call and she's like, get off the phone. Just star 69 that bitch. Yeah.
She's got all the answers.
Yeah, she does.
If anything goes down, I want to be with her. So anyway, she yells at the screen and everything's all crazy. And somewhere in the midst of it all, oh, he comes in and sits down next to
her. Yeah, her boyfriend.
Wearing his jacket.
Yeah, so her boyfriend sits down, but he's still got the... Well, you think it's his boyfriend. Still got the ghost face mask that he had on when he scared her. And she's like cuddling into him, like screaming. And then she like lifts her hand up and her hand's covered in blood from his clothes. And before she can do anything, he like stabs her.
In the side,
In the side.
And then it's like this slow motion, uber dramatic. She's up, she's staggering around the crowd, she's got blood coming out of her mouth.
I know this screening is crazy, but how, there are still people, like she has to basically climb over people, and so does he after, like, chasing her out of the thing. Did no one go, oh wait, she's, like, actually, like, pouring blood?
I know, and I think there's two things here. One is the suspension of disbelief, we do it, right? But the other thing is, I feel like they really worked hard to build up this level of chaos. While unbelievable IRL, they've set the precedent in the film, and they're really, I mean, they're still throwing stuff, stabbing motions, like, everyone's going bonkers.
And then she's in the aisle and he's like, gets behind her and he starts stabbing her again and again.
Yeah.
And then she kind of staggers up the steps onto the stage in front of the film. And you don't know if, like, everything goes quiet and you don't know if that's because you're looking at it through her eyes and she's dying.
Right.
Or if everybody starts to realize and,
yeah.
and everyone shuts
and
up.
And then it turned into, like, slow motion and people were taking their masks off to get a better look. And slowly you realize that they realize.
Yeah.
That someone's actually really hurt and dying. And so...
And she lets out this amazing scream before
yeah.
she, like, falls to her
collapses.
Knees.
Yeah. It's very good.
Excellent death.
It is an excellent death. It is not the opening that the original was, but it is up there.
I mean, I've got excellent opening.
It's an excellent opening. I agree. And the other thing is about it that makes it so scary is that it's so public.
Yeah.
That it can have... Because sometimes we think safety in numbers, right? Like, that's a mantra that you're taught when you're a child. And yet, here you are in this uber busy place and...
You are literally surrounded by people.
Right. And you're bleeding profusely and like... She's kind of like stumbling around, waving her hands, looking for help, and no one's helping her. That is scary.
Yeah.
Great opening.
Excellent.
We're holding thumbs up.
Two thumbs up.
Like yeah.
Well, four, because...
And then you get... Roots account. And then we get the opening title.
Yeah.
Scream 2.
Scream
And it's two. Just... You're like, I am buckled in.
Yeah.
For this ride. Take me. Let's go.
Let's go.
I'm ready.
We can do this.
Right. Here we have Sydney.
We're at college.
She's in a dorm.
There's like her phone's ringing and she's lying in bed. She picks it up, you know, so casual. And I love it because like it's Ghostface, but
yeah.
It's not really Ghostface. It's someone just asking her.
Hello, Sydney.
Yeah. And she's just like, yeah, who is it? And he's like, bah. And then she's like, yeah. And then she's like, who is this? And so, oh, you know, don't you know? And she picks it up and she's got caller ID because of course she does.
Of course she does.
She's this is why she's Sydney Prescott is
yeah.
right up there as one of my favorite final girls.
Yes.
From the get go.
Yeah, she's on it.
She's on it.
And so she handles this phone call with so much casual dismissiveness that I think the caller feels like a dick, ends up hanging up. And then she's like, up. She's going about her day. And on the TV, straight away, she sees Cotton Weary is being interviewed. On a TV show.
Yes. And he is the man in the first film that she had...
Wrongly accused
of killing her mother. So he'd been in jail for a year. So she's talking to her roommate, Hallie. And they're watching it. And they're also saying, you know, Sydney's... She's asking Sydney if she's okay. And she's like, yeah, you know, it's opening weekend. It's going to be crazy, but it'll be fine. Then one of the girls in the hallway is like, "Put, you know, watch the news." So they put the TV on. And this is where they find out about... The brutal murder of two of their college...
I didn't think it was at their college.
I presumed it was because it said it was Winston College. And I swear that's where...
Maybe
no,
it was.
Well, it was because in the film class, one of them says I had like bio with her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it was like it was a different...
They were older.
Fraternity or something. Oh, they were... Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they were like...
I thought there was something.
Yeah.
But okay, so that... So yeah, and they've been brutally murdered at the stab premiere.
Yeah. So obviously, like, Sydney straight away is like, where's Randy? And we get one of my favourite scenes.
It is a great scene, yeah.
And as someone who went to university to study film, I can say that my lectures were never like this. I really
wish
they were.
There wasn't, like, an open-minded, like, round-the-table discussion of films, no?
No. No.
Do people, like, have opinions and argue about them?
No.
What's what? It's just someone at the front of the class being like, ABC,
yeah.
Here's what happened.
Well, we used to watch a film, mm-hmm. and then, like, the teacher would talk about it for a bit. No, I don't really remember. Although, to be fair, I don't really remember much of university. It worries me
like,
how little I remember.
Maybe there were talks.
Maybe
I don't know.
Maybe there were. Maybe I just didn't go. I have no idea. But anyway, like, my class was not like this. Randy is in film class with Sarah Michelle Gellar. With, what's his name from Dawson's Creek?
Joshua Jackson.
Thank you.
Timothy Olyphant is in there, I think, who plays Mickey.
Yep. And,
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah. Of course, Randy.
And Randy. And this is where Randy gives his spiel about sequels.
Yeah.
That they suck. And I'm like, yes, Randy.
He says, by their very nature, they are inferior.
Yes.
And then everyone's trying to argue with him, and it's like, oh, you know, name... And he's like, name one sequel that's better. And to be fair, like I said, this is why I'm not saying sequels are better. I'm just saying that they can be as enjoyable because everyone starts like listing them.
They're like Aliens, Terminator 2. Eventually they say The Godfather 2, which is the one everybody says when you say that you don't like sequels. We get it. The Godfather 2 is good. But yeah, so he starts pulling all these names out and it's just a really great, this is great written dialogue.
Yeah.
They have a bit of a debate. Yeah. And it's lively and funny.
Then
and
someone says about, like, Stab. They're like, oh, you know, make a Stab too. And he's like, why? Why would anyone want to watch that? And I'm like, it's perfect.
Yeah. So, Sydney sees him through the window of the classroom.
She's waiting for him, yeah.
And calls him over, and they have this chat. And I actually wrote here about the cast. I'm like, oh, this cast. I just forgot how good it is.
Yeah.
And then you kind of see, and they had this conversation about just being safe and, you know.
Yeah, about keeping an eye out for anyone that could be Ghostface.
Yeah. And then here we have the introduction of another new character, Debbie Salt, who is a reporter that sort of meets Gale.
Yeah, she kind of worships Gale Weathers.
She's like, I was at your seminar.
In Chicago. I was the one asking all the questions.
But she, what is her name? She is a fantastic actress. I think she used to be in Roseanne. Feldman? I'm gonna look it up.
You can look it up.
Oh, Metcalf. Feldman. Laurie Metcalf. She has 2 Tony Awards, 4 Emmy Awards, and nominations for an Academy Award, a BAFTA, and 3 Golden Globes.
Wow.
She's like an absolutely epic actress.
Yeah.
A lot of her stuff is theater work. But yes, I think, yeah, she was in Roseanne. She played Jackie. She's in everything. Anyway, love her. So she's introduced as Debbie Salt.
Yeah, she's a reporter.
And so right after they meet each other, and it's quite a brief introduction, you have Dewey. She sees Dewey.
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 Yeah.
The evolution of Dewey and Gale.
But it's Sydney and sees him first, so they're still on the steps because they're watching the new press conference.
Mm.
So we've got like Sydney, Hallie, Randy. Is Derek arrived yet? Derek is Sydney's boyfriend. And maybe Mickey. Mickey.
Mm.
Yeah, they're all there watching. And then Sydney like looks over and sees this guy watching them. And everyone's like, who's that? And she's like, and runs, and it's Dewey. We're so happy.
We love you, Dewey.
Yeah.
Why is Dewey so cute? Is it because he's such a good guy?
Yeah, I mean,
he just wants Gale to do what's right.
This one was a little bit, like the first one, I'm like, oh, he's so young and sweet. And then this one, I was like, are they playing up a little bit too much on like the injured arm and like.
Yeah, it was kind of.
Because like after that, he kind of gets. No.
What, hot?
Yeah, like hardened. And this is not just because. Now I'm just thinking about when I went to Final of Horror last year and David Arquette was there and he took his shirt off and did some wrestling with someone from the crowd.
What?
Yeah.
He took his shirt off and wrestled with someone?
Because he's a wrestler.
Was the person that he wrestled a female?
No.
Oh.
Basically, some guy came up, because they let you ask questions, and some guy wants to do a wrestling move where he, like, slapped him. And he was like, yeah, all right, come on up. So he came up and he let this guy hit him, and he's like, right, me, now your turn. Or it might be the other way, but no, the guy wanted a smack from him.
Yeah.
From David Arquette, so he did that, and then he was like, well, I suppose it's only fair, you get to do one back, and took his top off, and he is fit.
I love the avenue we've taken this discussion down.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why it's an avenue.
Could be an alleyway.
It's fancy.
Yeah.
A street, a road, a plaza. Yeah, he gets, it's like the more hardened.
He gets like rugged.
He gets hotter.
Yeah. And by the fifth one, he looks like he could wrestle a bear.
I know. That's what makes it all the more frustrating, what happens later. But yeah. I mean,
so in this clearly, one, he's still.
Clearly, we're big fans of Dewey. Deputy Dewey Boy.
Deputy Dewey Boy. My name's Dwight. I prefer Dewey.
I prefer Dewey.
Yeah.
Dewey Decimal.
What?
You know what that is, right?
Yeah, I know.
I was like, God. Old, the Dewey Decimal System. If I ever have a dog, that's what I'm going to name him.
Okay.
In honor of the Dewey Decimal System. May it rest in peace.
Mm-hmm. So, it's Dewey. They have like a hello, and he's saying to Sydney that he's worried about her. And she's like, well, what do you expect me to do? Like, cut off everyone I know and go into hiding? So, Dewey says he's going to stick around and keep an eye on her. As Sydney kind of sees Gale, and she's starting to talk, and Gale's like, oh, can I talk to you? Ask you some questions, and she gets the mic out, and you can see straight away that, like, Because Sydney says earlier about Gail, like, oh, you've got to be nice to her. She saved our lives.
Yeah.
She did in the first one.
Yeah.
But you can see that immediately she's, like, really uncomfortable with this. And then before Sydney has a chance to really react, Cotton steps out and Gail's like, oh, we're live on TV for the first time since accusing him of murdering her mother. Sydney and Cotton are together, yes, and Sydney does totally, not react well. Yeah, they ambush her.
They ambush her completely. I totally forgot about that part. Yes. So she's pissed, obviously. And then Cotton feels bad because he didn't realize.
No, he thought it was a real.
He thought she knew.
Yeah.
And Gail had said that she did.
Yeah. And what I love is that Sydney goes to punch Gail again, like in the first film. And Gail's like, ah, and dodges it. And then a few seconds later, Sydney comes in with the slap.
You love Sydney.
Oh, I do love Sydney.
You love her.
I have such a Sydney boner.
I mean, she's fucking great.
Yeah.
She's up there for, like, final girls. You know, my favorite is Ripley, and there's a big argument that she's not a final girl. But in the first film, she kind of is the final girl. So, I don't know. Like, Ripley to me is more badass than Sydney, but Sydney's so relatable.
Mm-hmm.
She's smart. You don't get frustrated with her.
No.
Because you're just like, yeah, totally. And even that, you know, not just the smack, but I mean just expecting everything, how she's handling everything. But yeah, she's really not having it when Gail does that, which is rightly so. Yeah. And I think Dewey's disappointed in Gail as well.
Yeah, they have. And I wish I had actually got some quotes from this bit, because so we have Gail and Dewey like together for the first time since she published her book, I'm guessing. And he's...
And had kissed him.
Yeah, well, I think they did more than kiss. because he even says, like, he, like, starts quoting excerpts from the book where she calls him, like...
Inexperienced
and farmish.
Farmish.
And she's trying. You can tell she's, like,
Awkward. Doesn't know what to say.
But it's a compliment.
But their whole exchange is, like, total foreplay.
Yeah.
Like, they are completely...
They're, like, eye-fucking each other the whole way. Every single interaction, even when they're, like...
They are.
Being mean to each other, you can tell that those two were at it in real life by this point.
Oh, yeah. The chemistry is unreal. I mean, and that... It makes it, this relationship. You're, like, rooting for them completely.
Absolutely.
Even though she's a piece of shit and he's a genuinely sincere person. So then you flip over to the scene of Cece, aka Sarah Michelle Gellar, who she's just perfect in this.
She is. She's
no one could do this better, honestly. She just nails it. But she's the sober sister.
Yes.
So all the sorority sisters are out partying and she's home. She says something when the phone rings and it's Ghostface. She says something like, drink with your brain.
Yep.
Always make sure you have a sober sister. I felt like I had to write that down. Drink with your brain.
I genuinely want that as a t-shirt, part of our merch.
But she is home alone and does a series of rather dumb things one after the other, basically. So Ghostface calls, and it's the first time you get the real, like, you know, hunter after their prey kind of feel, like that he's toying with her. And it's, you live for this because it's brilliantly done and it's so fun from the first one. So yeah, he calls, she's home alone, she's just chatting away to him, and then he says, this isn't Rob or whoever.
Ted. She thinks it's her, like, boyfriend Ted, who's always calls when he's drunk.
But yeah, I literally wrote this down. This is the series of dumb things. One, lets her friend leave. I know we're not there yet, but lets her friend leave. Two, doesn't call the police or campus security. Three, keeps answering the phone. Who do you think it's gonna be? Four, runs upstairs.
Yes. You can see the spark in her. You can see the potential. And I'm not sure if it's just that, you know, by the time I saw this, I was also watching Buffy. And, you know, you kind of get them interlinked in your head.
I've never seen Buffy.
What?
I know. It's like my dirty little secret. I've never seen it. I've seen the movie with Christy Swanson, which I loved.
Yeah.
Never saw the show. I know. I get yelled at frequently for this.
I don't understand.
I think it just was... I was busy. I just didn't watch it. When did it come out?
Around this time. 97, I think.
I mean, I would have been in high school. I don't know. Just didn't watch it. I was watching X-Files. I was too busy watching X-Files.
But this was the one you moved on to because you started X-Files as a kid and then you kind of watched that. But then by the time you'd finished watching that, it was time for Buffy.
Yeah, I don't know. I just didn't watch Buffy. But I know, and everyone's like, what? It's so good.
Yeah. But anyway, so Buffy, I love it. She's watching Nosferatu.
Yes.
Because of course
surrounded
she is.
Surrounded by pizza boxes.
Yep. And she, to be fair, she does, like, so she's on the phone to her friend and she's saying, like, there's some creepy guy. And she's like, I'm going to leave. And she goes out the front door. And her friend's like, oh, call campus security. Like, don't leave. Call campus security. Because she hears noises upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes outside and, like, to run. And then she's on trying to call campus security. But she loses the signal because it's from the house. So she has to go
those
back into the house.
Portable phones.
And you can see she tries standing on the porch and doing it. Mm-hmm. And they still can't hear her. So she's walking into the house. And you can see how much she does not want to go back in there. And she keeps going forward and forward and forward to get the signal. And then we get a jump scare. But it's not Ghostface.
It's her friend.
It's one of her sorority sisters who hasn't left yet. And yeah, but you can see by this point, she's so kind of, I think she almost feels like she's so scared. But she thinks it was just her friend she was hearing and then some like creep on the phone. That she doesn't really do anything. She just kind of freezes.
Yeah.
And this girl's like, oh, don't forget to put the alarm on. Bye. And it's like, why are you so kind of shocked that you just kind of can't react? But yeah.
I mean, she, and then when, because she does go outside again after the friend leaves.
Yeah.
To try and call campus security or something, right?
She steps outside the door because you see her come back in and she's facing away from the front door on the phone and you see Ghostface slip into the house behind her.
Yeah. So it's scary. And she can't get anybody on the phone. So she comes back in and then he basically attacks her.
Yeah. So he attacks her and she has to run upstairs. But I'm like, you haven't got a weapon. Why have you not grabbed a weapon? But yeah, he comes for her. She has to run up the stairs.
Runs up the stairs. She's trying to run away from him. But he eventually corners her on the balcony. She tries to jump through a window even.
Yeah. And he like gets her and gets from the balcony, stabs her a few times, picks her up. So like, he properly picks her up.
He does. He's and like chucks her.
And chucks her over the balcony.
Like a suitcase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Onto the road and she goes splat.
I literally wrote by SMG and with two sad faces.
Mm.
I was sad that Sarah Michelle Gellar's time had ended.
Yeah, me too. And we go to the party that...
Yeah, because they were at a different sorority house. But
yeah.
They were all going to the same party that they've been talking about.
And Sydney's roommate Hallie is pledging for the sorority and they're trying desperately to get Sydney to join.
Yes, they really want Sydney, probably because of her weird proximity to fame.
And this is when we meet the two sorority sisters, Portia...
Portia de Rossi and Rebecca Gayheart, the Noxima girl.
Yes.
They may have names, but I don't know what they are. Sorority friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super sorority sisters.
Unite. I really don't think they do have names.
No, they're just really excited and they're like talking to Sydney and you can tell that she's just like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. And then someone's like, oh, there's something happening across the road at the other sorority house. And everyone runs outside to see.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, they're going to look at...
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Poor Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Cece died.
Yeah.
I have in my notes here just sort of a list of people telling me who they are. We're not getting real deep here, unfortunately. It's like, Joshua Jackson equals film class guy. I wrote, Dewey is playing hard to get with Gail.
So they are... I'm not sure where they are, but Dewey and Gail are having an argument. So those two are together, and then we keep bouncing back to Sydney and Derek. So Sydney and her boyfriend Derek, they didn't go across the road, they're in the house. And I think she goes to get her jacket, because he's like, right, I'll walk you home. So she goes back in to get her coat, and when she's in the house, because everyone's outside the house looking at the dead girl, Ghostface attacks Sydney.
Isn't there like a phone call? I have hello
Sydney. Oh yeah, yeah, the phone rings, and it keeps ringing, so she picks it up, and yeah, it's Ghostface.
Like,
hello
Sydney.
Sydney.
Which is like the line from...
Roger Jackson.
Yeah.
Doing best voice work.
And this is where they sort of try to red herring implicate Derek, her boyfriend, as like a potential suspect.
Mm-hmm.
They plant that real hard.
Yeah. Because
they're like, well, that's what happened in the first one. And then people are thinking, but that can't be. And here you have that murder mystery element that I referenced earlier that I love about these films.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So it's just the cafeteria part.
Oh, not yet. So basically, Sydney's in the house and Ghostface is attacking her, and Derek like sees and tries to like bash, in and he kind of gets in and he like chases or he runs off with Ghostface, and then Dewey arrives and Sydney's like, he's in there with Derek, and Dewey just opens the door And Derek's right behind the door, sat there with a big cut on his arm.
On his arm, yeah.
Which, you know, is like bleeding everywhere. And Dewey goes off but can't find it. Ghostface anywhere. So then they go to the hospital and they're talking about how, like, Dewey and Gail are talking. And I think they're talking about the arm, or someone's talking to Dewey about the arm, saying, isn't it weird that he's like pre-med? And so, and none of the missed like every nerve.
Yeah, it was like a perfect.
Yeah, so you know, properly planting it in Dewey's head as well.
But I have heard that he's playing hard to get with her, and she's growing unconscious a little bit.
Yeah. Like, so the next scene, we have Gail and Dewey, and they are figuring out the killer's motive. So I think it's when they're with the police sheriff, and he's writing all the victims' names on the walls, and this is where we find out Cece was Casey.
Yes.
Her name was Casey.
Oh, yes.
So then we realise they are doing the original.
And Maureen is the same name as Sydney's mom. Mother.
Yeah. So they're going through the list, people with the same names. That's when they're very flirty.
It is very flirty. But it's like, I think I just liked it because you have a little bit of the evolution of the character of Gail, like this, where she is growing unconscious a little bit because of Dewey. And it's just a really cute, like, kind of rom-com-y, lighter element to the story, which they also try to lighten it up in the next scene with this cafeteria singing scene, which is like stuck out in my mind from this film for so long. And I don't know. What do you make of this scene? Is it necessary? Why is it in there? Like, what's the point of it?
I don't know. I don't know if it's supposed to make us think Derek is
innocent or trying too hard because he's covering something up, or... We get a little 90s rom-com with Sydney and Derek as well, I think, here, when he's singing. It's very bad singing. And apparently, this is what all the actors had to do who wanted to audition for this role.
Oh,
this
awesome.
This was the scene that they made them do. They can get up and sing. And so you can say that Jerry O'Connell was cast in this film as Derek because of the way that he did the scene. And it's good.
Yeah, it works.
I mean, it's not the best I've ever seen.
Derek is singing to Sydney and everyone's like, Mickey's like there clapping, getting everyone up. And he's giving her his Greek letters.
I can't. It pisses me off. Who cares about your little necklace?
Yeah.
It's like such a big deal.
Hallie says to Mickey, like, won't he get in trouble for doing that? And she's like, yeah, you're not supposed to give your Greek letters to anybody, but it's kind of tradition. He'll just get beat up about it.
Yes, which they set up the scene later on. Yeah. That is true. So I guess it's sort of part of the story, but it's such a weird thing. And I don't remember hearing about that when I was at university, but then again, I was not in a sorority. So we'll have to refer to our sorority consultant who can give us the inside scoop.
Do we have one?
No. But I'm sure we can find. We're auditioning for a sorority sister.
Yes, a sober sister.
A sober sister. Yes, you have to be sober so you can drive us around and live nearby.
Both of us, even though we live in completely different parts of the country.
And be free just most of the time.
Yep.
And be willing to be paid in snuggles.
To be fair, our snuggles are worth like double anyone else's snuggles.
Jenny's snuggles are worth triple. Yay. Oh yeah, so here we get... more rules about the sequels. There's usually more gore, more deaths.
So the rules, I've got them written down. Number one, the body count is always bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the death scenes are always more elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
Carnage candy. And number three, never ever under any circumstances assume the killer is dead. Now, I'm going to do a mini quiz with you.
Solid pop rules. Quiz. Okay, pop quiz.
All right.
So speed.
So, Randy's number one rule for the sequel is that the body count is always bigger. How many people died in Scream?
Okay. Are you going to make me count them?
Well, yes, and I'll give you extra points if you can remember.
Casey, her boyfriend, Tatum, who else? I mean, Matthew Lillard dies, Billy dies... Does Sydney's mom count? She's already dead, right?
Yeah, she's already dead.
The cameraman with Gail Weathers dies. Does someone else die? I think that's it. No, someone else. I can't remember. Who?
The principal.
Oh, Henry Winkler.
Henry Winkler. So, yes, okay, seven people died in Scream.
Okay, yeah.
How many people do you think died in Scream 2?
So you've got the couple in the opening.
Phil and Maureen.
Phil and Maureen. Then you've got... Cece.
Yep.
Did he get her friend? I don't know, but he does get Hallie eventually. Mm-hmm. So that's four. Derek.
Mm-hmm.
5. I guess the killers.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them. 7. Who am I missing?
You're missing 3 people.
Mm.
So we'll leave it there. I'll just say, so 10 people die.
So, but basically the body count's higher.
Body count is higher.
In the second one.
Would you say that the death scenes are more elaborate in Scream 2?
Not really. Not really. Because you get...
I mean...
They're stabbings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, you get the knife through the head. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they're stabbings, pretty much. That's how he kills you.
Yeah.
I guess he threw the one girl over the side of the building.
I suppose a little bit more to it.
Oh, the two cops die.
Yes.
I was missing those guys. And someone else. Okay, maybe they were a little bit more elaborate in the second one. Thinking about the cop's death on top of the car. That was rough, man. And then even, like, the woman who stabbed Hallie. Like, that... It wasn't more elaborate necessarily, but that whole scene with the car, it was like the lead up to the death scene was more elaborate and intense.
So okay.
And what was the other rule? More gore, more death.
Never ever under any circumstances assume the killer is dead.
Okay. Well, that's why you always shoot them in the head.
Exactly.
Twice if you have the bullets.
Yep. So, yeah, so we have Randy and Huey discussing the rules of the sequel, and I love it also because they talk about who the suspects could be.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Randy says a few times in this, he's like, you know, it could be, Mickey, that freak Tarantino film school kid. He's like, but if he's a suspect, then so am I. And Dewey's like, maybe you are. And then Randy's like, well, if I am, so are you. And he's like, let's leave it. Sydney is talking to her drama teacher, which made me very, very happy because her drama teacher is played by David Warner and I loved him growing up.
He is a great actor. I did not know exactly what he was from, but he was so familiar.
Yeah, he's from a lot of British things. But the reason I love him is because he played the dad in a film version of Hansel and Gretel that I had when I was a kid that I used to watch all the time. But in that, he was like a really loving dad and he does everything to try and find and save his children.
He has such a soothing voice.
He does.
When he was talking to Sydney,
mm-hmm.
He's like, you must follow your heart. I don't know that he said that.
He was basically like that. Saying that, like, she's a fighter because he... Like,
so wait, one thing that I was unclear on.
Mm-hmm.
Was she studying theater?
Yes.
And Randy studying film school?
Yes.
I mean, I also just love that
in
and of itself. Because the theater parts, I had issues with the theater parts.
Okay.
Okay. All right. But we're not quite there yet, are we? Or are we? It's theater time. She's talking to her teacher. It's time for them to rehearse. She doesn't want to do it. He's like, the show must go on.
Yeah.
I'm Bob Fosse. The show must go on. So they're doing an ancient Greek tragedy and they've decided, I don't know why the director made this artistic decision to do it in like Greek times. Nobody does that. I mean, okay, the National Theater did it back in the day, but that's the National Theater. Most people are not going to connect on any level to a chorus of people in masks. Anyway, I just find it a strange artistic choice, but okay. Anyway, the mask work is on point. I had trouble watching it, but that's all right. Who does Greek theater in togas? Well, exactly. I want to speak to the director, too. So, I really do.
Sydney looks amazing, though.
Yeah.
She's, like, in this amazing red outfit, all, like, floating.
She's got, like,
shawls.
She's got, like, the leaves in her hair.
Yeah. And, yeah, she's, like, in this amazing performance. But, obviously, she's basically dancing around this set, which has got like thunder and lightning and rocks are crashing, and she's in the middle of this dance and she has a panic attack and freaks out because she thinks she can see Ghostface,
which is completely understandable given the horrific concept from the director. So anyway, I have this scene where I wrote I missed because I was in the bathroom.
Okay, yeah. So Sydney, she's like run out of the theater and she's just waiting, and Derek's there to pick her up. And she's basically like, no, I need space. I need you to go away. I can't. I have to be on my own right now, because she doesn't trust anyone at this point. You know,
rightly so.
She's so freaked out. When we have like, it's like the next day and we've got Randy, Gail and Dewey are sat in like the green on the campus talking. I love it as well, because this is a bit where Gail's smoking and Dewey says to Randy, when does she start smoking? And Randy's like, after the nudes were leaked on the internet. And she's like, hey, that was just my head. It was Jennifer Aniston's body.
Damn, I missed that. That's great.
Yeah. And they're talking, and then I think it's Gail's phone's ringing, but she hasn't picked it up, so Randy answers it, and it's Ghostface.
Ghostface.
So they kind of split up. Randy keeps Ghostface on the phone.
Yes.
And he's kind of walking around the park, and Gail and Dewey are kind of scouting the area, trying to find someone on a mobile phone who's making the call. Now, we have excellent, excellent dialogue from Randy.
Yeah.
He's amazing at this. When he's like, oh, what's your favourite scary movie? To Ghostface. And Ghostface is, and he's like, mine? Oh, mine's Showgirls.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
I could hear that in the other room. I have here Randy's death.
Yeah, so he's on the phone, and basically you see, like, Gail and Dewey, like, chase, like, desperately searching for whoever's on a phone. And they start following this guy who's going around this corner. And Randy's getting kind of worked up because Ghostface is like, why are you even here, Randy? You'll never be the leading man. And he's like, hey, like, fuck you. And he starts, like, shouting at him. Oh, he starts slagging off Billy. He's like, what about you? You're just, like, some copycat from some, like, homophobic, rat-haired mama's boy. And then suddenly he gets the van, the camera van, suddenly screeches up, opens up, and someone grabs Randy into the van. We don't see Randy die as such. You just see a lot of banging and the van shaking. And then you see like a reflection in the mirror of Ghostface raising a knife. And then the next thing you know, there's like blood leaking out the sides of the van.
Yeah. The next scene that I have is Sydney in the library.
Yes. So she is, while this is happening, Sydney's in the library with her two police guards.
Who are fucking useless.
So the sheriff, because when Dewey asks the sheriff, like, what are you doing to keep Sid safe? And he's like, oh, I've got my two best men. And yeah, they are rubbish.
Complete rubbish.
So rubbish. So Sydney's in the library, and she gets this, like, message pop up on the screen, and she doesn't understand, like,
it was she's an not, IM.
Yeah, because she's not logged message. On. And one of her, the person sent it, she's like, oh, no, you don't have to be. All the computers in here are linked. So she's like, it's Ghostface, because it's like, you're going to die.
Yeah.
So the police, like, grab her, and they don't, like, so they're scouring, looking for who it could be, and they just put her to one side in a doorway. And
they're like, stay here.
Stay here.
On your own. So, while I go look for someone on the internet in the room that I'm in. It's not how the internet works, but that's cute. So, yeah, they're total idiots, basically, and they, as they've left her alone to look around, Cotton Weary appears out of nowhere, and he sort of accosts her in the hallway. He's, like, so intense.
He's so intense. And aggressive.
Yeah, it's completely not the way to go about things.
No.
But he wants her to do an interview, and he's talking about, who's doing the interview?
Diane
Sawyer. He's, like, obsessed with Diane Sawyer. Like, that's the pinnacle of your whole life, just being interviewed by Diane Sawyer.
I've just realised for this part, I've got that she gets cornered by Cotton. She gets cornered by Cotton Mather's. Cotton Mather's was the guy from Salem who burnt all the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was a Catherine in the last film that wasn't in there at all. Yeah. So
I'm just mixing.
Just scribble that out. Yeah. We'll edit this out later.
But yeah, so anyway, he's really aggressive.
He's trying to get her to do this interview, and it's just a lot. So
he's really aggressive, and the police, because she starts shouting, and the police guards, who are rubbish, come, and they basically pin Cotton up against the wall, and they arrest him, so they go to the police station. And I think he's at the police station.
Oh, yes.
That, like, cause
they're trying to get an interview.
Yeah, they're trying to get an interview, and Gail gets into it with, what's her
name?
Yeah,
with Debbie. And
Debbie.
Debbie's trying to, it's almost like Gail's starting to grow a conscience here a little bit, and she's like, can you just give them some space?
Or yeah.
Something like this. Yeah. And so, at this point, her cameraman, Joel, also decides that he's leaving and says his farewells.
He is amazing. He had one of my favourite lines in the film. I think it's with a scene when they're in the park just before he...
He's smart. Yeah.
Yeah. What does he say? Oh, yeah. He's like, I'm going to get some donuts, some Prozac, see if I can't find some crack, and I'll be back when you all find a subject more Saved by the Bell-ish.
Yeah, so he's out of there. He's the only... Like, props to him, basically.
Yeah.
And so then you've got Dewey and Gail sort of having this conversation, and I think Dewey can sort of see that Gail is turning a corner, and they're talking about, you know, who the killer could be, and they realize that there is CCTV footage from...
Well, it's
what was it? It's from the Cece's death, basically.
Yeah, so it's the crowd, because they're talking about, like, who it could be and his motives and things. And then Gail's like, oh, wait, Joel recorded, like, crowd shots from the death. So yeah. They're like, let's go back and watch that. We'll probably find him on there. So they just go and casually break into...
like the video archive area of the... It's like the film part of the school almost.
Yeah.
There's like video archives. There's a recording sound room. Like,
it's crazy.
It is. And they... yeah, they... I do love the part that he's like, we'll go watch it on the VCR. Everyone drank VCR. Okay, so while this is happening, you get the frat bros who rock up and basically kidnap Derek.
Yeah.
Saying, like, about him giving his letters away or whatever.
Yeah, they basically tie him up.
And they take him to the theater.
Yeah. Do they take him to... I thought they took him somewhere else. I don't know.
No, they took him to the theater. It was like they were all partying in the empty auditorium. It was very strange.
But they tie him up like on a cross, basically, like a crucifix. So he's all tied up and he can't get down, and they like ply him with alcohol.
And while this is happening, the cops and Sydney are in the car, and Sydney's roommate, Hallie, gets in the car with her. They're like transporting her.
So they take her back to the dorm to pick some stuff up, and then they're taking her somewhere safe. So they're taking her to like a safe house, but Hallie's going with her.
Yeah.
So yes, her and Hallie are getting into the car. Then we have this other scene with Gail and Dewey where they're trying to do things, and they literally like, so there's all the synth on the soundtrack. And then they actually like bump heads, and then they're gonna fuck on the teacher's desk.
Oh yeah, it's very cute. I think I wrote Gail and Dewey forever.
Yeah, but then hearts. So like they're just about to fuck, and then one of the TVs turns on, and because they've still got the footage up, and then Gail's watching it and she's like, wait, that's not mine. And it's like a video recording of the actual deaths happening, not afterwards. And then it ends on a shot, and it's of Gail and Dewey from behind. And ghost faces up in the projector room.
So good.
So yeah. Good.
This part is great, actually. This whole part in like the sound booth, that whole thing. Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. And equally, it's kind of intercut with the scene of Hallie and Sydney in the cop car.
Yep.
And this is also very good. Like, basically... Ghostface rips open the door, right? That the cops are in.
Yeah, so they're in the car.
Because he kills one cop, like, immediately.
Yeah.
And the other one ends up on the front of the car.
Yeah, so they pull up at a traffic light or something. They're at a light, and they're there for ages. And because Sydney and Hallie are in the back, obviously they're behind, like, the grate, so they're, like, locked in, like, they're prisoners.
Yeah.
And Ghostface suddenly appears and, like, comes through the window and stabs...
The driver.
Kills the driver instantly.
Yeah.
So then the other police guy is trying to get out quickly and, like, get his gun. But Ghostface just comes at him and they completely fumble it. And, yeah, he ends up kind of on the top of the car.
Yeah.
And then Ghostface gets in the car.
And he's driving.
Yeah, and he's driving and he smashes into a wall or something and, like, pops the guy's head.
Well, he basically is driving, like, crazily, hitting everything. And it's like he goes underneath, like, a underpass that's too small. And it, like, smushes the body and, like, smashes it to the front of the car. It's pretty fucking gruesome.
Yeah.
And you see the body, like, at one point. It's, like, the mannequin's, like, flying. But, yeah, it's very gruesome.
Yeah.
So, then the car stops, and it appears that Ghostface is...
Well, because they crash, because they're all kind of knocked out. Yeah. All their heads are bleeding.
And the girls wake up, and Ghostface appears to be also passed out in the front seat.
Yeah.
But also, hang on a sec, just to go back to something. This is also at the point where you realize that there are for sure two.
Yeah, absolutely.
If not more. I was actually trying to think I was smart and be like, oh, there's more than two. But you know for sure.
Yeah, because this is happening
simultaneously
in different places.
Yeah. So while you've got this happening with Sydney and Hallie, you've got Gail
and Dewey are kind of fighting, and Dewey gets stabbed, basically. Yes. Because Gail starts running and she bumps into Cotton Weary, and he's like all bloody because he's just found Dewey.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, yeah, fuck this. And she like runs out telling everyone like it's Cotton. And then we have to go back to the really, really, possibly one of the most tense scenes ever.
Oh, the scene where they are stuck in the car, where Sydney and Hallie are stuck in the car with Ghostface, and they have to climb over him because it's the only window that's open. It's so intense.
Yeah, Sydney goes first. And you're like, no matter how scared she is, she still wants to, you know, she still wants to help her friend more. Her friend's in this because of her. And she's like, yep, like, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And she like rips open the thing and she tries to get out the passenger door and that's broken. So yeah, she literally has to climb over and out the window.
Yeah.
And she gets out and then she's like, come on, Hallie, it's your turn. And
And then you're Hallie so, has to do it.
You're so sure that she's not going to do it. Like she's not going to wake up. Yeah, she's not going to make it. You're so, so sure. But then she's out. And they get to the end of the road. And Sydney's like, wait, no, I have to know who it is. And Hallie's like, nope.
Nope. But the thing is, you're thinking, yeah, you want to know who it is. Why didn't you tear the mask off, like, after Hallie climbed over him? I would have just, like, ripped it off then.
Yeah.
But she has to go back. And, of course, he's missing, which I just knew was going to happen.
Yeah.
She goes back over the car. Ghostface is gone. She turns around to yell at Hallie. And he's behind Hallie. Yeah. Grabs her and stabs her.
Poor Hallie. And she even said, she's like, stupid people go back. They go back and they die. Like, we're not stupid, we're smart. Come on, let's go.
Let's go, yeah.
And she doesn't listen to it, and because of that, she's dead.
So, yeah, Cotton shows up covered in blood.
Yeah.
Gail takes the payphone from Debbie.
Yeah, she's like, I've got your goddamn story. and Sydney's running back on campus away from Ghostface in the car, and she hears there's a college-wide curfew on, so, like, no one's out and about. It's very deserted. And she hears the music in the theatre from her show. And I don't know why that would be a sign to go in there.
Well, she just said in the scene earlier, she did say a line that I really loved. She said something like, I'm tired of running.
Yeah.
I'm ready to face. I want to know who it is. And so I was kind of thinking that's why she went.
Yeah.
Because she's not dumb. She knows she's not it's going to be like a showdown, whatever.
Yeah.
So also, just to say, the play, because I did Google this, is the play Agamemnon from the Oresteia. So the Oresteia is one of the only surviving trilogies. All Greek plays used to be written in trilogies. And this is one of the only remaining ones that's in full. And they were doing Agamemnon, which is the first part of the trilogy. And in the description of it, it says that it's a play all about Cassandra. Well, it's not really. Cassandra is a character in it, and she's important. But I think Sydney is playing Cassandra.
Mm-hmm.
Cassandra is like a psychic. So she's like a seer.
Mm-hmm.
And Agamemnon brings her back as a conquest from him being off fighting the Trojan War. When he comes back and brings Cassandra, he tells his wife, he's like, this is Cassandra. She's going to live with us now. And his wife is very unhappy about that. And this is the play in which the wife, Clytemnestra, murders Agamemnon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Just a little backstory there for you. But interesting that they said it was all about Cassandra, because it isn't really. It's really about Clytemnestra and Agamemnon and their relationship. Cassandra is the mistress. She's like the extra woman. But I think that's very interesting character for Sydney, if you think about the kind of parallels there. And just that she is in peril.
Yeah.
But is a strong character.
She's very strong.
Who can see far into the future. But yes.
She goes into the theatre and she kind of comes up onto the stage. And then all of a sudden, like, Derek gets dropped from the... He's still on his, like, crucifix.
Yeah, where the new frat boys tied him
still
up.
Still tied up on there. And Sydney's like, oh, wait, what the fuck?
And then Mickey is basically trying to make it sound like they were in on it together.
Yeah, so Ghostface appears, and it's Mickey. And yeah, he tries to convince her that Derek was the other killer.
Right, and Derek's like, no, it's not true.
It's not true.
I love you.
I'm gonna kill you, man. I'm gonna fucking kill you.
Why are you doing this, Mickey? Friendship over. but Mickey wants to blame the movies.
Yeah, he had a plot this whole time. Because basically, he's got a gun, and he's pointing it, and yeah, he then shoots Derek in the chest. And you find out Derek had nothing to do with it. He was just in love with Sydney.
He was. Because Debbie rocks up and reveals that she's Billy's mom. And then she shoots Mickey. She's like, fuck you, don't need you anymore.
Well, yeah, because she's basically bankrolled Mickey to get into college. Because just so they could do all of this.
Yeah.
Which doesn't really make sense in the whole time frame. Like, it's only a year since Billy died. Like, could she really have done all that quickly?
I don't know. Maybe.
But yeah, so, yeah. Mickey's like, oh, I'm going to blame the movies. It's all their fault. And then she's like, but you're psychotic. And he's like, yes, but nobody needs to know that. And he talks about the trial. He's like, this is just the prelude. It's all about the trial these days.
That's true. He thought he could find his fame in the aftermath. And she's like, Debbie, like, just fuck off. And shoots him.
Debbie comes in. And she's like, no, there's not going to be any trial and shoots him.
So yeah, reveals that she's Billy's mom. They're obviously both very crazy. And there's what I consider to be quite the long, drawn-out showdown here. I think they lose a little bit in terms of, I don't know, the build-up, right? They're building to this climax, like the Death Star coming, the scene, the car, you've got tension building. And then...
Yeah, I know what you mean. This bit gets a bit weird, but I do love the fact that Sydney straight away, like, even though, you know, Mrs. Loomis is pointing a gun at her, she's like, yeah, I don't care, your son was a prick.
She's like,
oh, everyone blames the parent, about the parents. Yeah. Like, you're a bang up job there, Mrs. Loomis.
She gets some zingers in. I agree. I just think it's very long because then you've got like a bit of action and then it continues.
Yeah, so they're like shouting at each other and then she manages to get away and she's like, right, I'm going. She starts cutting the ropes, so everything that's suspended over the stage, like the lights start dropping. But then I get that. I understand why she's doing that. She's trying to knock her out. But then she likes like shaking the thunder. Puts on the fog machine.
Yeah. She turns on all the special effects, basically.
She needs all the drama.
You've got, like, the fire going in the windows. It's, you know, it's dangerous, yes. It's also very, very dramatic. And so she's more rigging. She starts cutting away more set rigging. So dangerous. And you've got these rocks that you kind of saw earlier that planting a payoff, right? So you get the rocks falling on Mrs. Loomis. But, of course, she's not.
I've just got written down, I will fight you with drama.
It is.
Yeah, Cotton turns up.
It's fatal. Yeah, Cotton fucking shows up. I'm just like, get out of
Mrs.
here.
Mrs. Loomis has got, like, Sydney at gunpoint, and Cotton's also got a gun.
This is what I mean. The showdown continues.
Yeah, and it's a bit like, I think it's because they just had to kind of wrap up this Cotton storyline somehow.
Yeah.
Give him some sort of redeeming feature, or I don't know. So, yeah, so he's holding a gun, and Mrs. Loomis is like, hey, look, if you want... You know, you want your what you do, you want your fame, I can give it to you, just let me kill Sydney, and then she can't hold you back anymore, you'll be the only one, you'll get all the interviews.
You'll be the leading man.
And you see him, like, looking, and he's like, Sydney, and it's because Sydney's still refusing to do the Diane Sawyer interview, and he really, really wants that Diane Sawyer interview.
It is, like, a huge driving force in this film.
It really is. And he's, like, contemplating it. You know, it looks like he's, like, and he points the gun at Sydney. And she's like, no. But, psych!
He kills.
He shoots Mrs. Loomis.
Yeah.
Like, Cotton saves her, but Gale has been shot.
And they make Cotton the hero.
Yeah, so Gale has been shot, but she's still alive. And so Gale gets up and there's two guns. And so Gale's like, can I have one? And so they've got the gun, they're looking at Mrs. Loomis who's been like shot in the chest. And she's like, oh, is she dead? And Sydney's like, I don't know. And then all of a sudden Mickey jumps up and Mickey's alive. And you have this amazing scene, like 90s scene of Sydney and Gale just like shooting Mickey. Like, bang, 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 bang.
Turns into like a full-blown Western.
Yeah. And then they're like, phew, okay. And you can see Cotton's just like, what the fuck? And then without doing anything, like just Sydney just looks at Mrs. Loomis and puts like pew, pew, two between her eyes.
Just in case.
And then we have the scene that we need where they're all outside in the ambulances and things and Gail's cameraman turns up. He's like, oh, I thought, you know, we could get this, like, live. Because she's, even though she's been shot and she's, like, all bandaged up. And he's going live. And then she sees his, we've got a live one here. And they're bringing out Dewey.
Yay!
He's not dead. Despite the really, really kind of convincing scene where he gets stabbed a lot. And they even kind of say, you hear the ambulance guy saying, oh, the scar tissue saved him. So it's like from the previous film, his scar tissue.
Oh, he's come full circle.
He really has.
And Randy?
Is dead.
Is dead.
Yeah, Randy's still dead.
When does Randy come back?
Randy doesn't come back.
I swore that he did. I thought he did. I wanted him to, but I wanted it to be true. Yeah.
I mean, Randy's nephew and niece are in films 5 and 6.
Don't remember, but Randy had the best lines.
He did.
Best lines. And in fact, there's a great line at the very, very end. It'll make a hell of a movie.
Yep.
Who says that line?
Cotton Mather's.
It's very...
Because...
Meta throughout.
Yeah, because like, all the press went up to Sydney, like, Sydney, how does it feel to be a hero? And she looks over at Cotton, and she's like, if you want to speak to a hero, you need to talk to him. And so all the press went over to him, and he's like, nope, you've got to pay for the interview.
I will get rich somehow.
Yes.
And it does make a hell of a movie, but so yeah, 4 stars. I stand by it.
Yep, four knives. My four knives are stood up.
These look like sliced off ears.
They do a little bit.
Yeah, just good
it's
time.
It's great. It's such
fun.
It's great fun. Great dialogue. The writing all throughout is excellent. The casting's excellent.
Yeah. So far, it's our highest rated sequel out of the we've done 3 so far.
Yeah.
And again, I wouldn't say this is better than the first one, but it is like as good as a part 2 is going to be.
Yeah. It is the perfect sequel, I guess.
It doesn't surpass the first one, but it's so close.
Yeah.
It really is
very good. It holds its own.
Like, more than, yeah. No regrets watching this one. So, recommend it wholeheartedly.
Please go. And if you haven't watched it in ages, go back and watch it again, because
it's just for the dialogue. It is a delight. But
it's
just
a delight.
For the dialogue alone, yeah. It's a winner. So
it just never gets old.
Right. Well, our series of sequels concludes next week, I believe. We're only doing 4. So it concludes next week. We will be watching Aliens.
Yes.
So one of my favorite franchises, the Alien franchise.
Yep.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too. It's been a couple of years since I watched Aliens.
Yeah, because I tend to watch Alien. Because we talked about this in our episode, and we both prefer the first one.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see upon a new watch what we think.
Yes, so absolutely.
I look forward to that.
So please rate, review, follow, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your hairdresser about us, please.
We love hairdressers, actually. Hairstylists.
We need some help with hair.
Make sure they know, though. That's very important.
Yeah. So, yeah, tell them about us.
Bradley's Cake, take us out.
Bye.
Bye.